From the CPR Newsroom, I'm Don DeBar with some news headlines. A peace deal to end the conflict in Libya and establish a government of national unity was announced by the UN Security Council. The overthrow of the former Libyan government 4 years ago by U.S.-led NATO forces led to two rival governments battling for power in the North African country. The UN-brokered Libyan political agreement was signed last week in Morocco and follows a year of difficult negotiations. Deanne Penn reports.
The Security Council has unanimously adopted a resolution which calls for the formation of the unity government within 30 days as specified in the peace agreement. The resolution was sponsored by the United Kingdom. Matthew Rycroft is the country's ambassador to the United Nations.
We welcome the process now underway to move to the formation of that government of national accord in the coming weeks, and we ask the UN Secretary General's Special Representative to continue his efforts to drive forward progress to this end. And we urge all those who have not yet signed to decide now to support the agreement and to work with the government of national accord once formed. The door is open and the hand of friendship extended.
The resolution also urges countries to assist the new government with defeating the terrorist group ISIL, also known as Daesh, and other such groups operating in Libya. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
Meanwhile, the U.S. position on the fate of Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad, has changed over the course of this past year. RT's Gayan Chichikayan has more.
The U.S. has signed on to a U.N. Security Council resolution which is set to lead to a political transition in Syria. But when Bashar Assad goes is not spelled out.
The position is that Assad has lost legitimacy. He cannot be part of a Syrian government. How and when he goes is still under debate.
Would you say that it is still being discussed and decided whether or not he can be part of the transition process?
So what I'd say is it is still being decided and discussed what that transitional process looks like.
There was a time when the U.S. insisted on Bashar Assad's departure before any political process could be started.
No future for Assad in Syria?
In Syria, the only way that the civil war will end is an inclusive political transition to a new government without Bashar Assad.
The last year and a half, we have said that Assad has to go.
But realism also requires a managed transition away from Assad and to a new leader.
It is not conceivable that Mr. Assad can regain legitimacy
and hasten the day that Assad's bloody tenure comes to an end.
Assad is going to have to leave.
Although the State Department claims the U.S. position on Bashar Assad has not changed, many see it otherwise.
Obviously, there's been something of almost a tectonic shift. Two things have happened over the course of the last few months. Growing realization, A, that the policy of regime change, which had been on the agenda for the most part for this U.S. administration, has been an absolute failure and has led to the growth of ISIL and the more killing and devastation in the region than the region has seen in decades. Secondly, the shooting down of the Russian plane by the Turks sent a message that perhaps this conflict will lead to a major conflict between great powers.
U.S. officials still say Assad needs to leave, only now they add he can stay for a while.
Last Friday's UN Security Council resolution on Syria was accompanied by statements from council members that it must be the Syrian people who decide the fate of their country, a position that's been stated repeatedly by U.S. officials. But those same U.S. officials have yet to say what will happen when elections are held in Syria in 2016 or thereafter if President Assad should end up the winner. In its first new budget after deciding to scrap constitutional constraints on its military, Japan's government approved another year of record military spending for 2016. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's cabinet Thursday approved $42 billion in military spending for 2016, an increase of 1.5% over 2015, which was also a record high. Next year's spending plan includes the purchase of U.S. surveillance aircraft and F-35 fighter jets. The proposed budget would be the fourth annual increase in Japan's military spending under Abe's government and represents 5% of the total declared budget. Tokyo argues that the move is aimed at boosting defenses of Japan's southern islands, where it has a territorial dispute with China. This past September, Japan's lawmakers approved controversial legislation ending the country's decades-long constitutional constraints on its armed forces to allow overseas troop deployments. The legislation introduced by Abe triggered nationwide protests over fears that the country would be put at risk of being dragged into U.S.-led wars. China Wednesday rejected U.S. criticism against the draft law on terrorism and urged Washington to refrain from applying double standards in the fight against terrorism. Hong Li, a spokesperson for China's foreign ministry, said the draft anti-terrorism law is completely reasonable.
In formulating the anti-terrorism law, we refer to the laws of other countries, including the United States. The draft of our anti-terrorism law mandates the obligation of telecommunications operators, internet servers, and service providers to assist public and state security organs in stopping and probing terrorist activities. This is both reasonable and necessary.
U.S. criticism of China comes as the U.S. National Security Agency, citing terrorism as an excuse, conducts the largest espionage program in history, including collecting phone, email, and social media data on Americans and others around the world. From the CPR Newsroom, I'm Don DeBar.